Today we do have a fairly lengthy text out of Isaiah chapter 14, Isaiah 14 verses 3 through 23. We will be focusing, however, on verses 12 through 14 today. But reading from Isaiah chapter 14, verses 3 through 23. When the Lord has given you rest from your pain and turmoil and the hard service with which you were made to serve, you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon. How the oppressor has ceased, the insolent fury ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of rulers, that struck the peoples in wrath with unceasing blows, that ruled the nations in anger with unrelenting persecution. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. They break forth into singing. The cypresses rejoice at you, the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since you were laid low, no woodcutter comes up against us. Sheol beneath is stirred up to meet you when you come. It rouses the shades to greet you, all who were leaders of the earth. It raises from their thrones all who were kings of the nations. All of them will answer and say to you, you too have become as weak as we. You have become like us. Your pomp is brought down to Sheol, the sound of your harps. Maggots are laid as a bed beneath you, and worms are your covers. How you were fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn. How you were cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. But you were brought down to Sheol, to the far reaches of the pit. Those who see you will stare at you and ponder over you. Is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook the kingdoms, and who made the world like a desert and overthrew its cities, who did not let his prisoners go home? All the kings of the nations lie in glory, each in his own tomb, but you are cast out away from your grave like a loathed branch. Clothed with the slain, those pierced by the sword, who go down to the stones of the pit like a dead body trampled underfoot. You will not be joined with them in burial, because you have destroyed your land, you have slain your people. May the offspring of evildoers nevermore be named. Prepare slaughter for his sons because of the guilt of their fathers, lest they rise and possess the earth and fill the face of the world with cities. Now, we have been looking for several weeks now and continuing into this chapter with God's destruction and judgment of Babylon. That theme continues today. It will continue even into the weeks to come. But I want us to make verses 12 through 14 our focus today, as we see the humiliation that comes to all who exalt themselves. Now, I want you to understand that the immediate object of this passage, the subject in Isaiah's mind, is the Babylonian Empire. Yet, as we will see, there is a broader interpretation that reaches even to us. In fact, what we are seeing today is the judgment due to anyone who would exalt themselves at the expense of God's honor and glory. We read, how are you fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn? Now, some translations, such as the King James and the Reina Valera in the Spanish, instead of reading day star in that verse, use the name Lucifer. Now, Lucifer means day star. And often we think of Lucifer as being the devil, being Satan. Now, we're going to see that there is an application for that here. But the primary interpretation, the primary application, deals with the Babylonian Empire. That's what the context tells us. We're talking about the Babylonian Empire. Now, Daystar. Daystar really is a reference to Venus, the brightest star-like object in the sky until it is eclipsed by the rising of the sun. Now, reading this, of course, seeing Lucifer used in the King James, and also in connection with other passages, one of which we'll look at today, our minds turn immediately to the devil, to Satan, to our adversary. And we would not be incorrect to think that Satan's involved here. But it is not Isaiah's first thought in this passage. Remember, I want to make it clear to you, Isaiah is writing about the Babylonian Empire. However, we will see that Satan enters into the picture. Are you confused yet?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll be clear before we're done this morning. Now let's look first at what this Lucifer that Isaiah is talking about, this day star, says. And then we'll look at a couple other passages in order to try and make it clear. In his heart, if you're looking at verse 12 through 14, in his heart, in the seat of his being, he says that he will rise to the level of God. He will ascend above the highest creations of God, the clouds and the stars, and he will set his throne in the highest place, and he will make himself like God. Now, one of the reasons why we think about Satan is because this is exactly what Satan encouraged Eve to do in the Garden of Eden. In his temptation of Eve, Satan said that if she ate the forbidden fruit, she would be just like God. That was the temptation he put before her. It wasn't the temptation of the fruit. It was what the fruit represented. The fact that God said you're not to eat of that. And Satan says, well, the only reason he doesn't want you to eat of it is because he knows that if you eat of that, you'll be just like him. That was the temptation. That she'd be just like God. Now, sin never changes. I want you to be aware of that. The manifestations of sin may change. Technology may make sin appear different. But really, sin never changes. It hasn't changed since the Garden of Eden. It's still the same. As I mentioned in our Bible study earlier, Satan doesn't have to be creative. He's not. He's really pretty dumb. But he doesn't have to be creative because the same old lies keep working. He doesn't have to be creative and intelligent in order to trip us up. Because we're really not all that intelligent at the heart of the matter. We're really pretty dumb. And so the same old things still capture our attention. Maybe they're dressed up in different clothes. And that aim of sin that never changes is to exalt the creation in the place of the Creator. It is our pride that says that we can do what we want and that we know better than God. It is this pride that throws off the restraints that God has given us, restraints that are there for our good, restraints that are there for our protection, and it is that pride that thumbs its nose at the one who is the source of all good things. If we really truly believe that nothing good comes from anywhere other than God, we wouldn't act the way we do towards Him. But it's our pride that says, I know better. It's our pride that says, I want different. It's our pride that says, I want to be up there and sit on the throne. Now, this was true for Satan's original rebellion against his Creator. He didn't like being subservient to God, even though he was probably one of the highest of the angels, if not the highest. And that name Lucifer, the day star, a sign of the fact that God had already given him a certain amount of glory. But it wasn't good enough for him. And so rather than enjoy his position as a created being, blessed by God, he decided to go on a rampage against God. So that was his original sin. It was true for the fall of man. That was the sin that led Adam and Eve to sin. And it is true in our lives each and every time that we choose to sin instead of to submit ourselves to God's ordinances. Every time that we decide we'd rather glorify ourselves rather than honor and glorify Him, then we're guilty of that sin of pride. And at the bottom of every one of our sins, no matter what they are, is that pride that says, I know best. Now I want you to recognize that each of us really are Lucifer. Each of us were created specially by God. Look at human beings made in the image of God. Having the glory of being made in the image of God. Having the intellect that we have. Having the creative ability that we have because we were made by one who is the supreme in intellect and who is the supreme creator. The only one that can make stuff out of nothing. When we create, we have to use the tools He's already given us. But we have a creative spark. We have a genius and intellect about us because we're made in the image of God. And we could wear the name Daystar. We could be the brightest in the skies until the sun eclipses us. But we don't want to just be Lucifer. We want to be the sun itself. We want to be the brightest light. We don't want to be eclipsed by anything. And so we rebel against our God and we decide that we're going to try and set our throne higher than His. Well, back to Babylon and back to Isaiah chapter 14. Even though we don't know if Isaiah had a specific Babylonian monarch in mind, and he probably didn't, because when he wrote these words, Babylon wasn't even on the ascendancy yet. The threat at this time was the Assyrian Empire that the Babylonians overtook. And we know that when Isaiah goes in to talk to King Hezekiah after the Babylonian envoys had come, Hezekiah didn't see the Babylonians as any threat. He showed him everything he had. You know, it's as if we said, well, this country is never going to be a threat to us, so we'll show him everything. We'll show him around the Pentagon. We'll show him every weapon system we have. We'll give him the secret tour of Los Alamos and Sandia Labs because we don't expect that they're going to be a threat. That's what King Hezekiah did with the Babylonian envoys. He didn't see them as being a threat. So Isaiah may not be looking at a specific Babylonian monarch. He may have actually been looking at the whole Babylonian empire to come and the fact that it was going to fall by God's judgment. But we do have an example of God's dealings with a Babylonian monarch, with a Babylonian king, in the book of Daniel. Now I want you to turn to Daniel chapter 4, page 741. Daniel chapter 4. Now, this entire chapter deals with this event. We're not going to look at the whole chapter. Okay? Before we read, we're going to read verses 28 through 33. Let me just set for you the tone for this. King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And that dream is a very unsettling dream. And he goes to Daniel, who already has a track record of interpreting dreams. And Daniel interprets his dream for him. And we get a sense here that Daniel likes King Nebuchadnezzar. Because he doesn't want the dream to come true. And the dream has to deal with the fact that King Nebuchadnezzar is going to be humbled in a very remarkable way.
Daniel,
what?
What's the address for Daniel?
Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4. We're going to be reading verses 28 through 33 in a moment. So, Daniel interprets the dream. It appears that some amount of time happens, because at the end of 12 months, when we get to verse 29, we'll find an event that happens. I want to read for you verses 28 through 33. Okay? All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. Everything that was in the dream, everything that Daniel interpreted, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon. And the king answered and said, "Is not this great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power, his royal residence and for the glory of my majesty?" While the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you, and you shall be driven from among men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. And you shall be made to eat grass like an ox, and 7 periods of time shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom He will. Immediately the word was fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from among men and ate grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hair grew as long as eagle's feathers, and his nails were like bird's claws. So Nebuchadnezzar here, notice what he does. He says, look at this great empire that I have built. Look at this great empire which I built by my mighty power and for my glory. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't have a place for God. This is the sin of pride. King Nebuchadnezzar claims all the credit. He does not recognize that it is God who raises and destroys empires. It is God who directs the events of this earth in His providence and for His glory. As far as Nebuchadnezzar is concerned, I built this, and I look pretty good. And I need to be glorified because of what I built. Well, what happens? The dream they'd had at least a year prior, the dream that Daniel had interpreted for him, comes true. And King Nebuchadnezzar falls into a state of insanity very similar to that encountered by King George III of England many centuries later. In this state, he is not regal. He is not kingly. He is not able to rule. He can't even care for himself, let alone a great empire. And that's what happens to him. In his pride, God humbles him. He says, I'm going to be great and mighty. I'm going to get my glory and my honor. And then he's tossed out to pasture eating grass. And in a form of insanity. Now, in verse 34, we find that he's a changed man. Let me read this. Let me read this beginning in verse 34 and down through verse 37. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my reason returned to me. And I blessed the Most High and praised and honored Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, and He does according to His will among the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay His hand or say to Him, what have you done? At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my majesty and splendor returned to me. My counselors and my lords sought me, and I was established in my kingdom, and still more greatness was added to me. Now I, don't miss these words that follow, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven. For all His works are right, and His ways are just, and those who walk in pride, He is able to humble. And that was a difficult lesson for Nebuchadnezzar to learn. That was a difficult lesson. 7 periods of time could actually be 7 years in madness. But whatever, it was enough to get his attention. And whereas before this happened, he said, look how great and wonderful I am. At the end of the day, he says, look how great and wonderful God is. And there's restoration. He's a changed man. He recognizes there is a greater king over him. He now knows that it is God who can both humble and exalt, and to whom belongs all honor and praise. Now, however, Nebuchadnezzar's descendants didn't continue in this path. And the Babylonian Empire ended up on the ash heap of history. Just a footnote in history. Now, in our passage today, we saw the restoration of King Nebuchadnezzar. But not everyone who falls is restored. This is the warning to us. Not everyone who falls is restored. I want you to turn with me, if you would please, to Revelation chapter 12, page 1034. Revelation chapter 12. Now, there's been a lot of interest in this passage lately. If you spend any time at all on Facebook or out on the internet or anything, you probably encountered some of the things that are going on and the Revelation 12 prophecies that are being trumpeted. The fact that about 2 weeks ago or so, there was an alignment of stars in Libra that then people said match up what's written in Revelation chapter 12. Now, there's a couple of problems with interpretation. Number one, this is not the first time since Christ's resurrection and ascension that specific pattern of stars has aligned itself. It's happened several times. It's happened in the last century, as a matter of fact. That's one thing. Secondly, you'll remember when I preached through Revelation, that Revelation 12 isn't talking about the future. It's a description of what God has already done in redemptive history in bringing Christ to us. Most of Revelation isn't about the future. Most of Revelation is about what's already occurred. And Revelation 12 is one of those passages. But I do want to read for you out of this chapter, verses 7 through 12. 7 through 12 of Revelation chapter 12. Now war arose in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brothers has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. And they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for they love not their lives even unto death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. Now I want you to recognize in that passage, in Revelation chapter 12, we're already talking about something that's already happened. Satan has already been thrown down. We don't know where in the past this event came, this battle between Michael and the angels and Satan and his demons. Most probably it occurred before the Garden of Eden. Most probably it did. We're looking back at redemptive history here. We're looking back at a history of things that have happened. And the devil doesn't have, Lucifer doesn't have the glory he once had as one of the highest of the angels. He now has fallen. He is no longer allowed access to heaven. He no longer has the access. And if we were to continue reading over to Revelation chapter 20, we would find that his end, his final end, is at the bottom of the deepest pit in hell. Punished forever. But Satan, while he has been thrown down, he is still furious. And he attempts to kill off those who belong to God. And he's the one that's behind every bit of persecution, every bit of tribulation, all the things that happen against the people of God. He's still furious. He's still powerful. You know, we're supposed to flee the devil. We're not supposed to stand up and go toe-to-toe with him. We're to flee the devil and flee to Christ. But he, in his fury, is still wanting to destroy the people of God. And that's because it's his pride. He still desires to be over God. And that's what leads him down this path. A path that will lead to his eventual destruction and to all who follow in his footsteps. Once he goes in that deepest pit of hell, he will no longer be a threat to anyone. But right now he is a threat. And we just need to be cognizant of that fact. Now, Nebuchadnezzar in his pride was humbled, and yet he was restored. Satan in his pride was humbled and thrown down and will not be restored. Satan will spend an eternity in torment separated from God. Now I want us to see something here. I want us to see that pride is always going to be humbled. It's always going to be humbled. The type of pride that says, I don't care what God thinks, is always going to be humbled. Now, for some, that humiliation is going to lead to eternal destruction. For some, though, the humiliation will come, but restoration will come. And we need to ask ourselves this question, where are we in this matrix? If we look at the fact that there is a continuum of eternal destruction and eternal pleasure, everyone deserves eternal destruction. Everyone has been rebellious. And yet God allows some to enjoy His pleasure and His joy. Where do we fall? Are we like Nebuchadnezzar who experienced restoration? Or are we like the devil who experiences damnation and no restoration? See, all of us, we need to recognize today, all of us in our pride have sinned. All of us have been guilty of the sin of Nebuchadnezzar. We've been guilty of the sin of Satan. We've been guilty of the sin of Eve and Adam. We've been guilty of the sin of King David. Because pride was at the bottom and the root and the heart of all of that sin. All of us have wanted our way instead of God's way. All of us have wanted to exalt ourselves at His expense. And all of us demand punishment. The wages of sin is death. That hasn't changed. But thanks be to God that He has sent His Son, Jesus Christ, to bear the punishment for our sin. He was humiliated on a cruel cross. It was He who was mocked and beaten and spit upon. And on that cross He endured the wrath of God that our rebellion deserves. And He did it willingly in love. Each of us have been enemies of God. But He in His love has adopted us into His family and given us security and a home. And why would anyone refuse that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because in our pride, we are unwilling to yield to Him and give Him the honor that He deserves. If we, like the devil, continue in our insane fight against God, we will ultimately lose in the end. If, however, like King Nebuchadnezzar, we come to our senses and we recognize that He and He alone is due all the glory, then we will find joy, eternal joy, in God's presence. And so we have to ask ourselves the question today, which will it be? Which will it be? Will I continue in my rebellion? Will I realize that rebellion deserves punishment? And I'll put my trust in Him.